Finally, guys, we can say it's game day. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Welcome to Hockey Central. Elliot Friedman drops by in about 4 or 5 minutes' time from Hockey Night in Canada, 31 Thoughts, and Wednesday Night Hockey. You'll see him tonight. You'll see Berkey tonight, Stewie, myself, a cast of thousands, Kevin Bieksa, Carolyn Cameron. Should be a good time. Guys, I am curious about one thing, because there is a certain, there's always, even though it's not going to be fans in the building, there's always an excitement, an electricity, a buzz for opening night. Berkey, did you ever have any traditions, or did you do anything special for opening night?
Not really. Obviously, I don't sleep very well. I didn't sleep very well last night. Before opening night, you're really nervous about the season beginning, even when you're confident in your team. Even, you know, we had 100-point teams, and you're still sleepless that first night because you never know what's going to happen. But no superstitions or anything like that. Just hard to sleep, get a workout in the afternoon so the game's a little less stressful, and that's about it.
What about as a player, Borny? Anything?
Well, the biggest thing for me is something the guys are going to be denied tonight, which is the first time you walk in the building and you smell popcorn again. It's the first thing that's different because everything is the same, right? Like you still go to the rink and you're used to practicing that rink and you walk in there and you don't smell popcorn. That's going to be weird because that's like such a trigger for me that this is real. This is a game night. This is, you know, people are going to be here. It's a thing. So that'll be a different experience for players getting up for it without the smell of popcorn.
We'll focus. That's an interesting point. We'll focus in on the Scotia North Division games here in a couple of moments. Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, the Oilers taking on the Vancouver Canucks. But there are five games around the NHL this evening, and it gets underway at 5:30 Eastern on Sportsnet 1 with the Pittsburgh Penguins facing off against the Flyers. The Lightning will raise the Stanley Cup banner at Amalie Arena at 8 o'clock as they face off against the Chicago Blackhawks and Axe, and also the Blues. We'll take on the Colorado Avalanche that game with the 10:30 start time. Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens. Berkey, we can actually finally start to talk about games and action and matchups and outcomes and consequences and decisions. What are you looking for tonight?
Well, I think these are the top two teams in the Canadian division. It's the Scotiabank Canadian North Division. I think they're the teams I've picked. I have Montreal picked to win the division, and Toronto picked a narrow second or a close second. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a hell of a hockey game.
What do you think, Borny, these two squads?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just feeling out what both teams are and what they have. And that's the weirdest part about this season is like we don't even have exhibition games to have a sense of what to expect. And this Montreal team is, you know, overhauled for you know, by and large. There's a lot of moving parts, or has been since the last time we saw them play a game, so it's really tough to know what to expect. I think there's a lot of feeling out to be expected, and I know everyone thinks it's going to be fireworks and goals, and it may well be, but I think it's possible too that there's just a lot of hesitancy as teams figure out what they are and what their line mates are like.
Berkey, why do you like Montreal tops in this division?
Their goaltending is the best in the league, 1-2 for me. Their defense has been upgraded. They were good to start with. They had the Trident, to use Juice's term. But they added Joel Edmondson, who I think is a legit top four defenseman who can defend and is mean. So I like their defense group, and I like their forwards. I think they've overhauled their team, to use Borny's term. I mean, I didn't like their team at the end of last season. Then you come back into the bubble, and Kotkaniemi, you look like a bust as a rookie, all of a sudden is an effective player. Suzuki played extremely well, so the center, and they got Dano, the center position set. And then I like they added Toffoli, so they didn't score much off the wing last year except for Gallagher. Now they add Tyler Toffoli, add Edmondson, add the backup goaltender. I mean, it's a different team. It's a deeper team.
This is a team that finished 24th last year, found themselves in the bubble, swept the Pittsburgh Penguins, and then lost against the Philadelphia Flyers. You mentioned that you didn't like their team. They didn't like their team. Mark Bergevin didn't like their team. Come trade deadline, it was, let's get rid of as many of these players as possible. And then after the success in the bubble, they went on a shopping and trading spree. Throw Josh Anderson in there, who comes in exchange for Max Domi. Do you share the optimism, Borny, that Brian Burke does about the Montreal Canadiens this season? We know they're better, but how much better are they?
It's funny. I actually went on my local gambling website, Coolbet, and looked to see if I could bet against the Montreal Canadiens, because I've heard everyone talking about how great the Canadiens are going to be and how much better they are. And yeah. I'm still a skeptic. I just, not because I think they didn't get better. I just think they were so far off. last year, and I still don't know, you know, where the goals are going to come from, you know, on this team. And I like the D fine. I just, I'm not as much of a Carey Price believer as everyone else. And I guess I'm a little bit more skeptical. I don't think they're bad. I think they're a playoff team in that division, but I don't think they're a tops in the division type team.
Special teams still very much a question for the Montreal Canadiens as well. You know, I've maintained, Berkey, that, you know, always there are some teams that the regular season, not that a regular season is meaningless, but you're not going to get any answers to any of your questions in the regular season. All the answers are in the playoffs. Are the Toronto Maple Leafs one of those teams this season? The regular season is the regular season for the Maple Leafs. Just playoffs.
Yes. The report card for the Calgary Flames and the Toronto Maple Leafs will be written in May, not in the regular season. Yeah.
Let's get Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts here in on the conversation. Does it feel different this year, opening night, Friedge?
It's more like, thank freaking God, right?
Yeah, there's part of that.
I'm really happy for it. I mean, every year, opening night is a great night, and it's a lot of fun. I can't speak for anyone else, guys, but I've been particularly looking forward to this one. It's too long. It's been too weird. Times are too hard on people. I can't wait. I'm very excited.
Borny?
You know, I was reading your 31 Thoughts, which is excellent, and everyone can check out on sportsnet.ca.
I did not read it, by the way.
I thought it was mandated.
What do you call it?
31 Turds?
Yeah, 31 Turds, yeah.
Well, except, I think it's a little bit better than that.
Except for the pieces that Berkey's the source on. Those are good thoughts. Those are the good ones.
But the part that stuck out to me was the NBA is saying that if you don't have 8 eligible players, that you forfeit the game. So the other night, the 76ers dressed an injured player and rolled with 7. And you'd mentioned that there's a possibility the NHL could have some sort of hard number like that, too. I believe you had it 14 skaters and 2 goalies.
That's the AHL. The AHL is talking about that.
Okay. So would there be a possibility in the NHL of having some sort of, you have to have a certain amount of guys ready to go, or is that likely to not be an issue?
Well, I just think, Justin, if you're around long enough, you kind of have an idea of the way leagues do business, or even people do business. You know, people have habits, and they have things that you say, okay, that's them, that's their identity. The NHL's identity on things like this is, we don't want you to pin us down to a number or any kind of target. So that's kind of the NHL's way. So, yes, the AHL, as it stood when I wrote it, because I was warned it could change, they're saying if you don't have 14 skaters and 2 goalies, then it's a non-game. And they're also saying that with their officials, by the way. If there's not one regular referee who can ref your game, you know, it's a non-game. But that can always change. The NHL, the way that the commissioner and the deputy commissioner tend to do things is, we don't want to be pinned down. We're going to make that call on a case-by-case basis. And if you heard their Zoom call with the media on Monday, one of the things they talked about was the hope that the taxi squad will eliminate this problem. So this way, if they don't say that there's anything set, you don't have annoying media like me and you, Justin, counting their rosters and seeing how many guys are on the bench. I think they're going to pretty much play it by ear, at least publicly.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. And if I were a GM, I wouldn't want a hard number. If I had the right 13 guys one night and we were playing a team that's really scuffling, I might want to play that game.
That could happen, Berkey. I mean, absolutely. I mean, in that Denver-Philadelphia game that Justin was referencing, they had to put a guy, as he mentioned, who was injured in uniform, so 8 guys in uniform. And after the game, the thing that Doc Rivers, the coach of the 76ers, said was, is it really fair to the health of the players who have to play all those minutes? Like, it's already a shortened season. You're already worried about COVID. His biggest concern was, are you risking even more the health of the players by doing this? And I'm sure that's a question that's going to come up here and there.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I played in the summer league in Minnesota when I was in high school. And there was a big concert in town. I think it was Uriah Heep was a big band back then.
Yeah.
Showing my age. And we had five skaters and a goalie. And the referee said, you're going to forfeit the game. I said, no, we'll play with five. So I said to the guys, look, we got to build up a big leader. So we got up 5-0 and then hung on and tied 5-5. We ended up going undefeated in that league, 20-0-1. And the one tie was the game where we had five skaters.
Oh, my God. So those four other guys must have been really good, Bertie.
I broke my nose. I broke my nose in the second period, too, and had to keep playing. It was ugly.
Old school hockey. We were just talking before you came on, Friege, about, more so the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll get your thoughts on both. Going into tonight's game, going into tonight's season, what are the big questions that you have about each of these teams?
Well, you know, I think that the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens, to me, are the two deepest teams in the Canadian division. When you look just up and down the rosters, in a year where you know you're going to lose people, where players are going to get hurt, and you're also worried about COVID, no teams have more players that can play at NHL level than the Leafs and the Canadiens. And I think the other thing I was looking at with those two teams is at a time when a lot of teams, not just in hockey, but in all sports, are kind of saying, without fans and these revenues, we're not spending any more dollars than we have to. They just said, screw it. We're going for it. And, you know, so I look at two teams that kind of have the same mentality. We're going for it, and we're signing a lot of bodies. We're going to be ready for this. And I think over the year, that'll serve them well. You know, I really like the Canadiens. I do. I think they're deep. I think they're good. You know, I'm really curious to see after they limped into the return to play last year, they beat Philly. They beat Pittsburgh. They gave Philly all they could handle. I'm really curious to see what that's done to the confidence of the group. And, you know, I think the Maple Leafs, the same thing. They didn't win their round, but I think they know what's at stake for this group. If they like playing together, this is probably their last rodeo as the Big Four. So I'm really curious about this tonight. I think they are as prepared as you can be for what this season is going to be like. And I think they both have a chance to A, win the division, and B, do damage.
One thing I wanted to clarify is earlier on the show I said that I thought Montreal would be a playoff team. I'd like to just get it on the record that I don't think they'll be a playoff team because I'd like to go against Elliot and Brian here on at least one thing, dig my heels in.
That's fine.
But I did want to...
Somebody's got to wear the jester outfit, Justin.
I'm happy to do it. Throw it on.
Betting against Elliot is usually a good idea.
Well, that's the only basis for my logic is that. I wanted to ask more about the taxi squads and what effect do you think they'll have on this NHL season? We've already seen this sort of goalie carousel where, you know, the Leafs didn't want to put Dell on and a couple guys get claimed. Do you think there'll be more frequent claiming of players because of the way this is all set up?
I think it all comes down to the quarantines, Justin. You know, for example, a Canadian team wants to bring in a guy, it's 14 days, right? As long as it's not from another, you know, if it's a player from a U.S. team. Like, that's one of the things that some of these teams are banking on, that the teams won't claim players because of the quarantines, especially going into Canada. You know, going into Canada is the most stringent one, 14 days. So I think that's one of the things there. Like, I got to tell you, and you know, Berkey, you'd know the player a bit better. I was surprised nobody claimed Shillington yesterday. I really was. I thought somebody would take a flyer on him. That one shocked me a bit. You know, there were a couple of guys who crossed over the border south. I know Toronto was really worried about Dell, and for very good reason. Montreal didn't put Mete on waivers, and for very good reason. They avoided that. But I think the biggest question is going to be, are you, now that the season started, you know, can you get, is it worth claiming a guy knowing that can't play for you for 7 to 14 days. And I think that's some of the questions that these guys are going to be asking.
Yeah, the number of GMs I talked to, they're counting on that quarantine period being reduced as the season progresses. If COVID comes under, if the outbreak in the States gets contained, which looks very difficult at this point, they're counting on that period being shorter at some point. I don't know if that's realistic or not, but certainly a couple guys have relayed that to me. They're anticipating probably a 7-day quarantine down the road.
I think, Berkey, from your lips to God's ears, I hope it happens simply because it means we've got this thing a little bit more under control. I'm with you on this.
With Elliot Friedman on Hockey Central. Elliot, always curious about the trade market, and we've talked plenty about Pierre-Luc Dubois and Patrick Laine's name out there, Jack Roslovic as well with the Winnipeg Jets, but given the nature of what everyone is going through and you guys just discussing quarantine and a lot of teams right up against the salary cap, other teams, you know, frozen budgets, what happens to trades this season in your estimation?
I think it's similar. I think, Jeff, everybody recognizes that the quarantine issue, you know, I think now, like, I do think, I don't know how close Columbus came to doing anything, if at all, in the last week or so. But I do think since the news has gotten out, there have been teams who said, you know, we're not going to fool around with this. If Dubois is going to be traded, you know, we have to make a good offer. And I think he got some good proposals sent his way that at least made him, okay, this is what I could do if I wanted to. I don't know if he came close at all, but I heard there were some interesting ones that came across his way. But the thing is now, if you're Columbus, your goal is to make the playoffs. Like, you're competing this year. You're trying to win games. And I think everybody's kind of looking at it like that. So my guess, and I could always be wrong, but my guess is the mentality, Jeff, is going to be once the season starts, let's see how we do. Like, if we flop out of the chute, a team out there flops out of the chute and says, oh, we've run out of runway already because it's very hard to catch up, then I think those are the teams you'll start to see say, okay, you know, are we going to do something here? But if you're making a deal and you're looking at it and saying, it's not going to help us for 7 to 14 days and may actually make us weaker, how many teams are going to be doing that? And I think a lot of teams won't be doing that until they think they're out of it or it doesn't really affect them.
Elliot, what do you think it would take for the league to go to a hub? You know, just in trying to get some sense for, like, I know they want to get through this in 31 cities. I know they're in 30 cities right now. But there's certainly a level with the spread where they would just go, we got to get everyone in the same place here. I don't think it's even all that unrealistic. What do you think it would take for that to happen?
I just think, Justin, that's that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like, I think if there's no other options, then, like, if you heard Bettman the other day, he said, you know, we knew we couldn't ask our players to do that again. We had one opt-out, Casey Nelson, the American leaguer, with Buffalo. But if there had been a bubble, there would have been more. And they knew it. They knew there would have been more.
So this really turns on discipline now. Now the season begins, it really turns on the discipline of players and staffs on every NHL team to see if they can complete this successfully. The other sports have battled with it, but they seem to get it right as it went farther along, like in baseball. It's all about discipline now.
Well, I think, too, if you look at what's going on in the NBA right now, and, you know, there seems to be some careless behavior there, but I guarantee there's a lot of people who followed protocols and just, you know, got caught up in it. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the challenges that league is going through this week. And you know, you're aware of, you know, what's going on, of what's happening. They're getting more and more games canceled every night. And, like, they started, when they did their first testing at the beginning of training camp, they had close to a 10% positivity rate. And they were really worried about that. And then by the end of training camp, they had it down to zero. And now you're looking what's happening. You know, you saw what happened with James Harden. We see what's happening with Kyrie Irving right now. But still, I guarantee there's a lot of players there who've been responsible, and you just can't help it. I mean, it's just everywhere right now. So I think all you have to do, and yesterday they came out with new protocols, things like no guests in your hotel room. And I just think that all you have to do is look at the NBA, which I think tends to be really on top of things and all the challenges that they're having. It's a warning. Look at Vancouver. You know, they're going to be missing two players tonight. Yep. We don't have clarity yet. One, is it a positive? Is it a false positive? They don't know yet. The other was living with them. You know, it doesn't take a lot for all of this to become something that, you know, hijacks your team for anywhere from a day to 2 weeks.
You mentioned Vancouver. So no JT Miller, no Jordy Benn. They're the nightcap game tonight, the second half of the doubleheader. Vancouver Canucks at Rogers Place to face off against the Edmonton Oilers. I know you like Elias Pettersson, even liked him last year as a stealth or sneaky heart trophy candidate. Has that certainly potential again this season. But, you know, everybody that I talk to from Edmonton all say the same thing, or all saying the same thing right now. Connor McDavid is on a different planet, and he wants to prove who the best in the game is. What are you hearing about McDavid?
Which planet are we talking about here?
The planet where they make elite level hockey players.
Pucktopia. That, you know, the planet could affect my analysis, Jeff. I just wanted to let you know that.
It's a very professional.
I just think that he's wired a certain way, and that's to be great. Like, you know, you look at him and you can see, like, I think the best players or people, or the most successful players or people, are the people who are like, I would rather rob my mother than lose a game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's kind of got that look to him. When he loses, he's got that angry face and he looks furious and he can't stand it. And I just think that they came back last year. You know, how many people last year were calling the Oilers like a stealth Stanley Cup pick when the return to play started? I saw a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And they lasted four games against a team that only made the playoffs because, you know, we went to 24 teams. And I think that really sucked for him. And, you know, if you listen to kind of what's coming out of Edmonton right now, they feel disrespected. They recognize not a lot of people are picking them. A lot of people are looking at the holes on their roster. And I think that Oilers group feels like they're not being properly given what they deserve based on the year they had last year. So I would expect that he's going to be great, and I think the other guy's going to be great too. And they will have to be great because, you know, I'm sorry, Oilers, but I do think you got some holes still that you got to fix.
Do you expect anything to be different stylistically in the NHL this year? I mean that in, like, you know, the Canadian division in particular feels pretty offense heavy. I know there's going to be a lot of, you know, taxi squads in and out. There's been a lot of goaltenders turning, you know, changing teams. My expectation is more offense. By the way, I saw that Jeff predicted the league leader in points to have 95 points this year. He was way above everyone, but I agree.
I think McDavid.
He's right.
Yeah, Connor McDavid's going to tear it apart.
You know, I just think that, Justin, no exhibition games. You know, how much, mm-hmm. like, you played. You went through training camps. How much did the quality of play change between exhibition game one and exhibition game whatever, 4, 5, 8? Probably a lot. You went from scrambly to not very scrambly. Okay, we're in our systems now. So I think that it's going to be scrambly. No, but no defense is better. Like, if teams are bad defensively, I'm all okay with that. I think the other thing, too, is I'm curious about the emotion level. Like, the guy who I think tonight in Toronto comes out of that game shot out like a cannon is Josh Anderson. Like, I bet you after signing the big deal and being traded in a tough year last year where he was hurt, I think that those guys, like the Josh Andersons, the Brendan Gallaghers, the Wayne Simmons, like, they are going to be counted on to create the emotion. I think those guys are going to be – and also, 56 games, guys, like, you have no opportunity to fall behind. a bad start and you're doomed. With the loser point, you cannot crawl out of that hole. So I think it's going to be emotional. I think it's going to be scrambly. And I think that it's going to stay that way, except for the teams that fall out of it. I think that's going to be a really difficult. That's one thing actually I was talking about with someone today. If your team falls out of it, in this day and age, with what we're playing through, teams are going to have a big challenge keeping those players motivated.
Yeah, I agree with that, Elliot. They're all four-point games, and you can't have a poor start. I think it will be scrambly, and I think that favors teams that play with great structure, like Columbus.
Islanders.
Like the Islanders. I think the Islanders are going to have a good start because it is going to be scrambly, but they're not going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that in the podcast, Jeff. Like, last year, why did they reach the Eastern Conference Final? I think it's a lot because when there was so much weirdness going on and teams were kind of trying to put it back together, the Islanders, they know their identity. They know who they are. And I think that really benefits them. I agree with you. I mean, goaltending is always huge, but it's even more huge now. I mean, like, guys, like, this is the most unpredictable season in our lifetimes, I really think. You know, Berkey, you've got a few more lifetimes to pick from here, but at least in mine, it's unquestionably the most unpredictable season.
Okay, well, then let's finish with this one, because you and Justin are, as we all know, degenerate gamblers. What is, from a gambling point of view, what is everyone missing on? Where is some smart money going this year?
Well, I'll tell you this. A couple of long shots I really looked at, I thought the Capitals' odds were really low. For as a team, to win a division and to win the Stanley Cup, I think they're being underestimated a little bit from what I've seen. And if you want one really sensible long shot bet out there, and I don't want anybody complaining to me if he doesn't win it. I'm saying it's a long shot bet. It's Provorov for the Norris. I saw it at like
odds on
500
that one?
To 1.
Wow. Well,
500.
Oof. That is, listen, he's first pairing for a team that, listen, I've got them winning that division, and that division's the toughest in the NHL. That is such a good division. We'll see what happens. All right, Friege, on that, we'll let you go. We'll watch for you on television tonight. We'll see you at the shop.
See you guys there.
There is Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts, Wednesday Night Hockey and Hockey Night in Canada. You guys like Philly? Just as a quick aside, you mentioned Ivan Provorov there a second ago. Berkey, you want to have a quick thought on the Philadelphia Flyers? They're in a really tough East Division here.
Yeah, they are, but they got a good team. They were the best team, you know, really a solid team in the bubble. Not the best, obviously, but really good. I really like their team, and I like the way their coach drives them. Yeah. And with Patrick back healthy, playing on the third line,
That's huge.
Some depth. I mean, yeah. I think having a good third line is going to be really critical during this season, and that's one area where I think Edmonton's taken a step that most people don't acknowledge. I think they have a legitimate third line now, but no, it's going to be like it's like Elliot said. I hate to agree with him, but it is really unpredictable because so many of the team with a flat cap, so many of the teams are top heavy, which means they're thin. So you look at Vancouver now. They got to go into tonight's game without JT Miller. That's a massive loss.
To the leading goal scorer last year.
That's a massive loss, and who knows what the reason is. But if it's multiple games, you know, and that's what I'm saying. The teams where I like Toronto, one thing they've done is I don't like their bottom six for skill, but they've got depth in their bottom six. If they get banged up in their bottom six, they got good people. They've signed wisely. They got good people on the taxi squad that can step right in. Mm-hmm. So, no, it is really hard to predict. I look at Vancouver, and I'm like, okay, tonight's game. Without JT Miller, am I going to pick them to win? No.
No, I actually am not picking them to win either. I wanted to go back to the Philly thing and just say that sure. I think the Flyers really hinge on the Giroux Voracek thing to me, those two guys, because it's, you know, they're older guys, and if they're still stars in this league, if they're still guys in the, you know, top 100 NHLers, then I think Philly's a really good team. If they, if those two guys are in the decline, you know, significantly and really fall off and aren't important, the Flyers may not have the firepower. So to me, their season really hinges on a couple of their older forwards.
Yeah, Voracek not exactly seeing eye-to-eye right now with Alain Vigneault. Right. I think the quote coming off the weekend was he has to earn his ice time. Joel Farabee playing ahead of him, Travis Konechny as well. But, you know, Berkey, to your point, right down the middle, like Sean Couturier, Kevin Hayes, and then a healthy Nolan Patrick. You have Scott Laughton as your fourth-line center.
Yeah, that's not bad. Like, Scott Laughton in the four-hole, give me that one.
That's pretty good. But Ivan Provorov, 500-1 for the Norris. That is tempting right there. And I'm not even a gambler, Justin Bourne. Well, we'll hit a break. More Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Tonight, don't forget, season openers, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens pregame. Coverage starts at 6:30 on Sportsnet. 7 o'clock, the puck drops on Sportsnet and right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to the program. Leafs have tonight kicking off. Well, Jesus, Joe Thornton's 23rd season in the NHL. It's Maple Leafs facing off against the Habs. Pregame at 6:30, puck drops just after 7. And then the second half for a doubleheader, the Vancouver Canucks travel to Rogers Place to face off against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Edmonton Oilers. Merrick alongside Bourne and Burke. And guys, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of things here. One, I want to play this clip from Donald Fehr, Executive Director of the NHL Players Association. The Scotia North Division, the Canadian Division, call it what you will. There's been a lot of chatter about what the future of this division is, and maybe it just ends at the end of this season, and that's it. It's a one and done. It's like Team North America at the World Cup, never to be seen or spoken of again. Here's Donald Fehr on Good Show on the future of the Canadian division.
So far, there's been no real thought about it on any organized basis, certainly no discussion with the NHL about it and so on. And a lot of the history of the NHL involves rivalries, as you know, which are cross-border. So that would be a big lift if we ever got to that point. That said, however we got here, and it's sad that we are, but however we got here, it's a unique opportunity to see some repeated matchups. And my guess is, given the frequency with which they're going to play one another, you're going to see some really intense games. And that's going to be good for everybody. Like we do after any season, people will sit down and review and look at it. But I think the expectation is that we'll go back to a much more traditional, if not the traditional, setup next year. But we'll see. And I certainly hope you're right about the kind of attention and interest this will spark.
That's Donald Fehr, Executive Director of the NHL Players Association, earlier on Good Show. Is there not at least, Brian, a conversation to be had about keeping this division together? Like, we all know that Seattle's coming in, Team 32, four eight-team divisions, it all finally lines up. But a couple of things here. To increase revenue quickly, this could be one way to do it, with all the rivalries of Canadian teams, to say nothing of essentially handing a Canadian team a Final Four position in the playoffs, to say nothing about what that does for a Canadian rights package. Is there not at least a conversation, Berkey, to be had about keeping the Canadian division together?
Well, I need to get some instruction from my bosses. I mean, this may be something that Rogers feels, Sportsnet feels very strongly about and want to continue. And certainly I'm a company guy, so if that's the line we're going to take, I will take it. Mm-hmm. From my perspective as a season ticket holder, I think this year is really exciting. I think it's amazing. But it was a product of no choice because of the quarantine. This is not someone sat down and said, let's do a Canadian division. And I think Montreal and Ottawa are going to be thoroughly sick of the travel, even though the schedule's better. And they're not going to travel so far and play one game. They'll play two or three or four on the trip or six. But I will tell you, as a season ticket holder, as a former team president, this year seeing teams 8, 9, 10 times, people get sick of that. And this year will have novelty. It will lead to some truculence, which I love. Mm-hmm. I think Donald Fehr is right about that. But I think I do think people want to see Sid. They want to see Ovi. They want to see some of the other stars. They want to see the Stanley Cup champions. And I think they'll, as exciting as it would be for 1 year, I think it'll revert back to, let's see, now, let's see the, you know, the other opponents around the league. Now, if they can rig the schedule for more Canadian content where the Canadian teams play more among each other, that suits me fine. And remember, every team plays in every building now. That's a relatively recent thing. I think that goes back to 94, I want to say, because I was at the league when we implemented that. And people are all like, well, we want Sid. Well, they didn't want Pittsburgh before Sid got there. And they certainly didn't want Washington before Ovi got there. So it's a cyclical thing. I don't think we need to play in every building every year. I think every other year is enough. And that might be a chance to load in some more Canadian content.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I love the idea of this upcoming season having a Canadian division. I love that it happened by chance and not some sort of, you know, manipulation to get it to happen. Because honestly, I feel like the NHL has a couple of franchises that kind of hang on, kind of teeter on the edge. And I just feel like partially because we are a Canadian-based company that focuses on Canadian teams, you really run the risk of losing some franchises. Like, I don't know how many fans are going to keep up with what's going on with Columbus or Dallas or Florida, you know, if they're not in their same division or coming to play these teams. So I think for the health of the league, it's good to bring the Toronto Maple Leafs to Arizona and to, you know, to bring the Montreal Canadiens to, you know, well, any team you want to name. I think it's good for the league to mix the Canadian teams in there.
Yeah, and keep in mind one thing, Jeff, and along with what Justin said, 8.5% of hockey-related revenue goes into the revenue-sharing pool, and that has resulted in massive checks being written for the Carolinas, for the Floridas, for the Arizonas, $25 million U.S. plus to fund their operations, and that money's almost gone. So I'm really curious to see how some of these softer franchises are going to function. They got most of it last year because we played 80% of our games, but this coming year, that pool's going to be very small.
You know, you mentioned something there about the schedule early on, Berkey, and I want to pick up on that conversation because Montreal opens up this season. Tonight they face off against the Maple Leafs. They open up with six games on the road. And Claude Julien put, you know, as much of a good sort of rotation on this one by saying, well, you know, early in the season, it's good to get out on the road. The guys can all bond, as I guess, as much as you can during a pandemic, given the realities of social distancing and not getting together as a team other than at the arena. Is there any benefit at all to opening on the road? Like, what I was always told is, if you have a team, and Montreal does fit this description, if you have a team where there's a bunch of new players, like you've had a, Berkey calls it a churn. If there's a big churn on a team, it's good to open up with a road trip. Get the guys all together, going out to dinner together, get to know each other. If you have a team with a lot of churn, it's not great to start off the season with a big homestand where everyone's just back at home and everyone's separate. Is there any value for Montreal, given their churn, to open up on the road this season, Berkey?
Well, when I ran teams, we get the schedule from the league. And I remember in Vancouver 1 year, we got the schedule and we had a four-game road trip. We played Rangers, Islanders, Devils, and Boston, say. I remember talking to the league and said, can you make that six? Like, we had a 100-point team. We had a really good team. So we weren't afraid of road games. You get a chance to knock off six road games the first 10 days of the season. Are you kidding me? And then you look at your home road split after that. So I would be all in favor of that. Montreal's got a good enough team. I don't think they're afraid of this road trip. Not one bit.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a great point. I totally agree with that. It's, you know, I know early in the season when you go on the road and, you know, you're eating every meal together and walking to the rink together and trying to find something to do together, playing cards together. It's really good to bring a team together. And yeah, you hate to be a bad team, go out and get dummied to start the season for the first 2 weeks and then try to sort it out. So yeah, it's not such a bad thing for a team like the Habs.
Okay, tonight's Maple Leafs and the Habs, and a couple of things to pay attention to. Maple Leafs fans will get a chance, as we all know, to see some of the new players in the lineup. Ditto for Montreal Canadiens fans. But a lot of the Maple Leafs' fortunes are going to rest on the shoulders of Austin Matthews. And Austin Matthews is one of four players, along with Fedorov, Andrejczyk, and Clapper, to begin their career by scoring in the season opener four straight seasons. No one's ever done it five. Matthews has a shot tonight if he scores against the Montreal Canadiens this season. Borny, we'll start with you. We talked a lot about what McDavid is going to bring to this season, and he looks like he is flying. And has found somehow another gear. What's the expectation for Austin Matthews from Justin Bourne?
just way too high, probably. I honestly have super high expectations. Everything I've seen from his game and the evolution of it leads me to believe he's, you know, one of the guys who could be a Hart Trophy finalist if he stays healthy for the season. He got some Selke Trophy votes last year, deserved or not. They're going to put him on the penalty kill. He was a goal off the Rocket Richard. And then by all accounts, he comes into this season. He started working with, I believe it was Patrick Kane's trainer, who kind of changed the way that, mm-hmm. that he operated off the ice. He's 14 yep. points down. This is a big man who's trying to be a little bit more agile, a little bit more limber to stay healthier. I really like that decision from him. And I think this is a guy who's going to pour the puck in the net this year.
What impresses me about Austin Matthews was I thought last year he made a really concerted effort to become a three-zone player. And I don't think he's worthy of Selke consideration yet. And I don't think you want him to be. Like if I'm mm-hmm. if I'm the Leafs, I want the 50 goals. I want some responsibility. Yeah. But he actually made a concerted effort to be better in his own end, be more aggressive on the forecheck. Like, he was a much more complete player last year, and his offense didn't suffer. So to me, I would take him aside and say, I don't want you to win a Selke Trophy. I want you to win a Richard. Like, he's got the best shot in the league, in my view, or one of them. And maybe, you know, there's guys you could say Pulak's got a better slap shot, or this guy, Parayko. But as far as a wrist shot, a quick release, and a deceptive release, he's going to score 50 goals. And I don't know if it's this year in the shortened season, but mm-hmm. it's a treat to watch him. So to me, I think he's in that group. When you talk about the top players in the league, you can't get past five without including him.
You know, that's an interesting point about Matthews. And there's a story about Ren Blair talking to Scotty Bowman when he was coaching with the St. Louis Blues. This would be late 60s, early 70s. And he said, you know, here's my advice to you. He said, everyone is so concerned about taking a player like a goal scorer and teaching him how to check. He said, here's what you should do. If you have a guy that can score 30 goals, show him how to score 40. If you have a 40-goal scorer, show him how to score 50. That's what you should be doing with your players. What did you expect your coaches, Berkey, to do with like elite-level goal scorers like Austin Matthews? Did you say, he gave us 40, see if you can get him to 50? Or do you say, we want him to be more of a 200-foot guy?
Well, first off, the easiest thing to change on your team is your grit. Right, you just sign a couple of tough guys to play on the fourth line. So that's the simplest thing to fix. So I always had physical teams, but that was the easiest thing to fix. Bring in a Colt Knorr, bring in a Brad May, all of a sudden you're tough. The second easiest thing to fix is defensive responsibility. So I can get a guy to play on Austin Matthews' line, whether it's Zach Hyman or whomever, and say, okay, you're the primary defensive guy on this. You've got to be aggressive on the forecheck, get Austin the puck, but then you've got to get back too. I can find a guy who likes to sweat and put his work boots on and likes to bleed once in a while. I can find that guy a lot easier than I can find a 47-goal scorer. So to me, you don't want this kid to win the Selke for me. Just say, Austin, be responsible, but keep scoring goals. Shoot more. I'd like him to shoot more. If he had 47 goals, I'd like him to shoot more. I think he passes up on shots that have a chance from him. Like, you got to remember, Brian Burke takes that shot, it has no chance. But Austin Matthews takes that shot. There are shots from all parts of the ice that are not dangerous unless it's him, it's Austin Matthews. Mitch Marner can't score from certain areas of the ice where Austin Matthews can, because Austin can put it through the goaltender.
Yeah, it comes off his stick so weird. It's tough to describe, but like Ovi's shot does that too, where you see him take those kind of toe wristers that dip and dive, and you know Matthews can find those weird spots. I think he was over 20% shooting percentage last year, so I absolutely agree with that. We'll be entertaining to see if, you know, who's going to play defense on that line with him, Marner, and Thornton. I guess they're going to have to be in the offensive zone quite a bit, but I like the idea of you have to have a bare minimum, so if you want to be a 50-goal scorer, great. You have to be able to halfway defend a little bit. But, yeah, do what you do best, and don't try to change that. Don't try to be someone you're not. You're going to get the best out of guys.
On that, we'll break. Don't forget, Maple Leafs face off against the Montreal Canadiens. Game one, the NHL season. First game this afternoon, 5:30 on Sportsnet 1, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Philadelphia Flyers. Our coverage of the Leafs and the Habs gets underway at 6:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. Puck drops just after 7. More Hockey Central in a moment. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne and Brian Burke. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. welcome back to the program. Leafs Habs early, Canucks Oilers late. Berkey, we'll start with your thoughts on specifically the Oilers. We talked a little bit about Vancouver previous, and Connor McDavid playing up on that top line, as we all know, with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Cassian, Dreisaitl with Yamamoto and Dominic Cahoon. Your thoughts on what we see tonight from the Oilers?
Well, on the third line is Archibald, Puljujärvi, and Turris. So I think they've got a third line, which is a rarity, a third line that can score in the Canadian division, where I think teams are mostly top-heavy. So I think they're more dangerous than people are giving them credit for. Mm-hmm. But I expect without JT Miller, I mean, I just think he's a driver on that team. He's not just their leading goal scorer. He drives the team to perform, and it's just too bad. I think Edmonton's going to beat them now.
Questions about the Edmonton-Vancouver game, Borny?
Yeah, here's my great hockey analysis. Goaltending is important, and I don't know who has it in this division. You know, the Canucks are like, all right, is Thatcher Demko the guy? If he is, I kind of like the Canucks. If he's not, they're in some trouble, aren't they? And I mean, Braden Holtby may bounce back, but there's big question marks. And then the Oilers, I think that's the only reason anyone really bets against the Oilers is, like, are Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen going to be the guys? There's some reason to be skeptical, so they're out to prove a lot of us wrong.
They really thought they were getting Jacob Markstrom. Like the Oilers, I think were pretty convinced that Markstrom was going to Edmonton.
And it's on, boys. It's on.
It's on.
It's on indeed. Here we go. Finally, we can actually start talking about games instead of speculating about teams. Pre-game coverage starts tonight, 6:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. Puck drops just after 7 o'clock. The Toronto Maple Leafs open up against the Montreal Canadiens at home. And then the nightcap game, the second half of our doubleheader. We'll see the Edmonton Oilers at home at Rogers Place facing off against the Vancouver Canucks. The first game on the docket's 5:30, the Battle of the Keystone State, Crosby and the Pens against Giroux and the Flyers. Talk to you tomorrow.